This episode is proudly brought to you by California Cryobank. Use code LOVEISLOVE for a free level 2 subscription to their donor catalog.
The Queer Family Podcast. Love is love is love on the Queer Family Podcast. Love is love is love on the Queer Family Podcast. Love is love is love on the Queer Family Podcast. Love is love.
Another testament to the healthcare system. We were in the hospital for 2 weeks and we didn't get a single bill.
Stop. Stop it right now. Stop it.
We pay into the national healthcare system every month. So there's a percentage that's taken out of my paycheck. So we do pay for it. But to not get hit with like a $10,000, $20,000 bill at the end of that was just major. So, I mean, the NHS, it's complicated, but it was really beneficial for us. And we got really amazing care, which was wonderful.
Wow. See, what the heck, U.S.? And you're not, are you citizens there?
No.
See, you're not even like, what the hell?
Yeah. I know. It's crazy.
What? Why can't we figure this out? Ay. Welcome to the Queer Family Podcast, the show all about family, but with gay. I'm Jamie. I'm your host. I'm your gay host. And this is the show that highlights, celebrates, uplifts, and normalizes LGBTQIA+ families in all of our beautiful identities. And this episode is a good one, as we are right smack dab real close to a very polarizing election and a scary one for many of us LGBTQIA+ individuals. We're going to dive into a personal story with Alicia and Emily. They are a queer couple who are navigating their journey to parenthood over in Scotland, at a time when access to healthcare and mental health resources and family building options like IVF are being highly scrutinized or restricted in many places in the States, their story of building a family in Scotland offers a bit of hope and insight. And I thought that was really important to bring to y'all today, as we are just nearing getting closer and closer to this election and learning the outcome of what happens. It's a beautiful story. They are originally from the States, Alicia and Emily, and they came out in a conservative environment, as many do in our country. I don't know. I just think it's a really great story. And it's just a reminder that even amid political turmoil like what we're in, queer families and queer folks persist and thrive. And now, on the note of the election, I just dropped off my little one at school, and there were folks outside handing out ballots, which I found very interesting. This is a ballot to vote yes on Prop 1. New Yorkers, if you're in New York, you should pay attention, find out what all your propositions are going to be on your ballot, get to know who and what is on the ballot. I am going to take my time this week leading up to this election to do that. Everybody should do that. But this is, I found it interesting that they were handing this out, that all these older women were actually handing out this pamphlet. And Prop 1, basically what it says about it is protect New Yorkers' abortion rights and fight discrimination. I did a deeper dive on this. It also puts protections in place for reproductive rights, like IVF, access to IVF and contraception, and the rights of transgender individuals and children. So it's a really important one. I plan to vote yes on Prop 1. You should do your research and find out how you feel about it. But it's just the people who are against Prop 1 are folks who are anti-abortion. And there's this one group called the Coalition to Protect Kids New York. And it's the same kind of thing. They spew the same kind of rhetoric that I have been talking about in our board meetings, the CEC District 2 in New York City board meetings that my wife and I have been attending and fighting. They're spewing the same kind of veiled language that is very discriminatory against trans kids. And they say things like, if Prop 1 passes, it will allow little boys to play on girls' sports and things like that, which couldn't be further from the truth. It's just the same. It's all this language they're using to scare folks into thinking that giving trans kids rights takes away the rights of cisgendered kids, which is not true at all. So anyway, do your research, do your homework. And I thought it was really interesting that all these folks were handing these pamphlets out in front of our school, because we happen to have our vice president of our PTA is one of the folks on our CEC board who continues to vote against trans kids. And so I think there was a reason they were outside our school. And now I want to see if I can get involved and actually work with them. And maybe I can hand out pamphlets in front of Craig as well. That's his name. I said his name. If you're listening, Craig, do the right thing and vote in support of trans children. Seriously, dude. Anyway, okay. I hope you enjoy this episode. Everybody go vote. Do your research. Find out what you're voting, who you're voting for, how you're voting. And let's get the vote out. Let's get some equality up here in these streets. All right, here we go. Enjoy this episode. Helen, Beulah, let's roll that tape, shall we? Enjoy. And remember, no matter what the outcome is, queer families, queer folks, queer individuals, we continue to thrive and we will continue to thrive. I love y'all. All right, let's roll that tape.
Queer Family Podcast, love is love.
Hi, I'm Devin Whitmire. People from South Carolina, like myself, are proud of their state, but even we don't know every nook and cranny or every piece of culture or history. To explore places that are off the beaten path, you have to talk to the people there because their stories, their ideas make everything come together. From Discover South Carolina, it's the Palmetto Porch. To learn more, visit scpalmettoporch.com.
Hi, Alicia and Emily.
Hello.
Hi.
It is a pleasure to have you here. You two wrote in and I was like, yes, come on in. Let's hear this. So I'm really excited to just dive into your story. Thanks for reaching out.
We're so excited to be here. We've been listening for years. And the podcast has meant a whole lot for us, both
in our journey
individually and together, like as a couple and building our family. So yeah, we're really, really excited to meet you and to talk.
It does make me want to cry. And I have to say, it is really exciting to be interviewing actual listeners, you know, because I do still get a lot of listeners who I interview, but I also get a lot of people who are in the field of fertility care and, you know, people who have a book and, you know, and those are fun too, but it's really fun to just connect with the whole reason why I started this dang show in the first place was just, you know, so that we could all hear each other's stories. And it's for all of us because there's no representation of stories like ours out there. So it's exciting to talk to listeners who understand the value that these stories, as personal as they are, bring to the world around us. So I'm excited.
Yeah.
And with that, let's launch right in because you know the dealio to your 30-second elevator pitch. On your marks, get set, go.
Hi, I'm Emily and this is Alicia. We are, I already forgot what I was going to say. Okay, so we met in college, in university in Texas. So we're American, but after we came out and got married and moved to Boise, Idaho, another conservative state, and we lived there for about 3 years, and then we moved to Scotland. So now we live in Scotland. We've lived here for 5 years. We just had a baby a year ago, and we're thinking about baby number two.
Boom.
Boom. You made it, even with a mess up. Nice work. I like that. You know, I'm Scotch-Irish. That's what my grandmother said.
That's awesome.
I don't even know what that means. I don't know if that means anything at all. But that's what we say, Scotch-Irish, whatever the hell that means. So, I've never visited my homeland, as I say to the kids.
You should.
As a joke. I would love to. That'd be fun. You love it there?
Oh, I love it.
Yeah, we do. Mm-hmm. We came only for 2 years originally, and then we extended a year, and then we extended longer than that. And now we're here
to stay
permanently.
Wow, that's amazing. How is it being, we're already off course. We have a whole bullet list of things and now I have all these weird questions to ask, but I want to know, how do you identify being queer in Scotland? What's it like out there in Scotland, in my homeland?
Actually, Scotland is amazing. Edinburgh specifically, but the whole of Scotland is one of the more progressive countries in the UK and Europe. It's the first place to start teaching LGBTQ history in schools.
What? Like in public school, like public education? Oh, wow. That's cool.
We did look it up before we came. We wanted to make sure that it was progressive enough for us to live here.
And yeah.
coming from conservative states.
Because being queer, anytime you go anywhere, you have to make sure that it's acceptable, you know, that you're going to be safe, which is ridiculous that you have to do that. But we looked it up and it's one of the most progressive. So we were like, okay, that's great. And it's been amazing living here. There's tons of queer community. It is really amazing.
That's good to hear. Oh, I got to go visit. I'm going to go to Scotland.
Definitely need to.
We have a room for you.
Yep. Yeah.
Ooh, okay, I'm coming.
With
bringing
your
kids.
Yep.
Of course. They don't. I don't go anywhere without them. That's wonderful to know. And it is a sad reality that us queers have to, not just traveling, but when we're looking for where we're going to live, even in the States, we do have to check the temperature on how that community is with queer folks. It really is sad. There should be a podcast about that. It has to exist. There's a podcast about anything. If it doesn't exist, somebody needs to create that. Let's go. Okay. So, all right, let's dive in to this story. So you met in Texas.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And what's this? I feel like there's a story there.
Yeah. So I lived in Texas the majority of my life. And then Alicia, all of her life. And we went to a Christian university. So that's where we met.
Interesting. Okay.
Yes. Yeah. It's interesting. Okay. We met at Bible study.
As you do. Yeah.
Exactly. I know.
Exactly. Alicia was the Bible study leader.
Oh my God. The plot thickens. Uh-huh.
And I just was attending. Yeah. And we just kind of hit it off after that. And it was pretty rough. I mean, you can imagine Texas is conservative and then being at a Christian university, it was a very rough experience for us, but we had a couple of really key people who were supportive of just us, like individually and together as people. And they loved us a lot and really great community, even though it was very small at the time. So it was a bit rough, but we made it out of there.
Okay. So you met, it's Bible study. Like, how did the Christian school feel about homosexuality? I don't know why I have to say homosexuality when I'm talking about religion, but how do they feel about it?
Because they use it. It's gross.
Same-sex attraction.
It was not a great situation.
Yeah, it was a really difficult situation, too, because Emily and I were super involved in our church. Mm-hmm. Like, we went to the same church. And at the time that we met, I was a resident assistant. So I worked in the dorms. And then Emily later became a resident assistant. And when we decided, that we probably wanted to be together, we almost got fired from our jobs.
Yeah, because you can't be role modeling that to the young minds. Sheesh.
So we were in the closet for a long, long time and didn't come out of the closet until she was a year ahead of me. So she graduated, moved away, and then I was still at the university and I didn't come out of the closet publicly until I graduated college.
And before college, were either of you, been living that queer life at all?
No.
I love how you say that. No.
That's my favorite thing to say.
No, we had not, but mostly because, being in a religious background, it was very frowned upon. And
right.
I definitely, I knew I was different. I definitely had attraction, but when you're in a religious upbringing, it's called same-sex attraction, which is the worst thing.
It's so gross.
Yeah,
it's so
it gross. Is.
That term is the worst.
But I
love to say it because it cracks me up. Because we love that same-sex attraction. I got no problem with it now.
Yes. It's great.
That's so funny, though. All right. So you knew you had stirrings, as they say in that book, The Giver, that my daughter's reading right now. But, of course, would never, ever act on that. And then, and then, met, and it was fireworks. And
Pretty much.
And then you lived your relationship basically in secret, or you were out to some, but not to all, basically.
Yeah, pretty much. There was a period where we didn't know what was going on. We were just friends and then
living in a gray space.
We were kind of in the gray and we liked each other, but we didn't know what to do.
As you do.
And cause the religion just really complicated everything. So we were just trying to figure out what to do. But then eventually we ended up, officially saying, okay, we want to give this a go.
Well, there was a point where I went back to my family, trying to figure out if I wanted to be in this relationship with Emily, if I could, and just wanted to ask my family, what their thoughts were and if they could help me through this. And I only ended up telling half of my family at that time. So it was my mom and one of my brothers. And my brother freaked out really, really badly and told me that he was ashamed of me. Still to this day tells me that he's ashamed of me. So we're not speaking. Oh my God. And so I ended up breaking things off with Emily.
Oh my God. Which is
the worst. And so we went about half a year where we were not together, but we were still very close. And yeah. Then I had a whole summer where I tried to figure out my life and tried to figure out what I wanted, who I wanted to spend my life with, coming home to. I decided that was obviously Emily. And so I came back to her and I said, if you will forgive me and take me back, I would love to be in a relationship with you.
It was really romantic. It was really romantic. Yeah. I was dating a man at the time, which was...
What are you doing?
I don't know what I was doing, honestly. I was very sad.
Very sad.
I was very sad.
I get it. Yeah, I get it. Oh, my God. Wow. That's awful, though.
Yeah.
I mean, it's great. It's great. And I love the romance. And also, man, come on. Yeah. Family? Yeah. Oh, I'm sorry. And were you still in school at this time?
Yep.
Okay, so you get back together and then eventually graduate. And then, Emily, you said that you didn't officially come out till after graduation, right?
Yeah.
And how'd that go? I'm like biting my nails.
I started coming out slowly as Alicia was as well. So my family, I have 7 siblings. So there's a lot of people to come out to.
Oh, jeez. You didn't do my method where I just told one person in the family and I was like, so now you tell everyone else. Okay. But I don't have that.
I didn't think of that. I didn't think of that. Yeah, that would have been better.
I made my mom do it.
Yeah. No, that would have been, well, I don't know if it would have been better or not. I don't know, because they would have said their own message instead of my message. But yeah, so I did it gradually one by one over time. And the majority of them did not go super well.
Oh.
It was rough. The roughest was my parents, and things were rough with them for a long time, and they didn't come to our wedding, which was really sad and really hard and still really hard. Yeah. But some of my siblings did come to the wedding, which was great. And today things are in a better position. They are, I don't know how I would say, 'cause they're not accepting. I would not call them accepting, but they're maybe tolerant, I guess. So they really love Alicia. They've welcomed her into the family. It took a lot of time to get there and some therapy sessions with my parents and my therapist, which was quite intense. But
yeah, I can imagine.
It's taken some time, but they've definitely come a long way.
Just even that statement that I'm tolerated. Like yeah. That is... just hurts to hear. It makes me angry. It makes me sad and it makes me angry. I have to call out the dog right now because Jerson is probably like, oh my God, what is the dog doing? Jerson. So there is a dog. No. Y'all know about the dogs. Kira makes an appearance every single episode. Let's be real. We're queer. We have dogs.
Yes.
And cats. And I love it. Oh my God, look how cute he's sitting next to you. They.
This is Cinnamon.
Cinnamon. Oh my God. I love dogs. Come on now. If you did hear the dog earlier, that really was a dog. It wasn't like some weird ghost in the background. Nice. Sound issue on our part. All right. So, Emily, you're tolerated in your family, but things are a lot better. And Alicia, how are we with family at this point?
Mostly pretty good. So my mom is very supportive of us, and my oldest brother is very supportive of us. Him and his wife love us dearly, and so that's been great. It's just recently I haven't spoken to my other brother, in almost 2 years, I think now, because we had a big falling out Christmas, of all days. He just... again, like, we got into this really random kind of argument because he wouldn't let his son paint his nails. And I just said, you know, you've never really been accepting of us and you still say that you're ashamed of me. And he said, yeah. And so we just are pretty much done at this point until something can change.
Ugh. Good riddance. And also that fucking sucks. I'm sorry.
Both at the same time. Yeah. So complicated.
It really is.
It is, but it's not.
Yeah, I mean, it shouldn't be. It is complicated, but it shouldn't be.
Yeah, you're right. It shouldn't be. And it is. And it shouldn't be. Ay, ay, ay. All right. So, okay. that's out of the way. We've talked about coming out, and then obviously things work out between you. You end up getting married. And when does baby making start? Like, when does the talk of baby making start, I should say?
I think we always said 5 years into our relationship that, or like 5 years married is when we would have a kid. So we kind of always kept that in the back of our minds. And so Alicia wanted to have kids a lot earlier than I did. So she started talking about it and bringing it up. And one day she said, I have this podcast, this queer family podcast. Actually, it was called If These Ovaries Could Talk at the time. Uh-huh. And
yeah, you are OG. OG listeners.
Yes. And when she brought it to me and she showed it to me, it was just too much for me at the time because I wasn't quite ready to have those conversations. And I was dealing with other personal stuff with my family, like just trying to deal with all that. And I went through some depression and it was, so it was kind of hard to take all that in at the time. But over time, I think you even stopped listening as much.
I did.
We just got busy with other things. And then I started listening to it when I was ready. And then I listened like every episode. I was like always listening to it. Yeah. And so I was then telling her about different episodes and I heard them. And I think it really, really helped me just hearing everybody, everyone's different perspectives and experiences. And like we've known and met queer people over time, but not a lot that had babies. And so getting really comfortable with the different ways that you can go and the different processes and like the terms and the ideas of being ready myself to have a child. And yeah, it was just complicated to get ready and having something that was queer people talking about having babies just really helped.
Really helped both of us.
I love this. Oh my God. I'm just going to bring you in to talk about the show anytime, anytime. That is wonderful to hear. And so I've never actually done this before. A lot of times when it comes to our families, you know, we have an idea in our heads of how we think we would do it if we could. And then it doesn't always, usually, it doesn't end up the way we had planned in the beginning stages of planning. You know what I mean? So what was your original thoughts on how you would do it in the ideal world, like in the ideal circumstances?
So I think ideally, I never really wanted to be pregnant. So even like growing up, I just never really had that like, oh yeah, I want to be pregnant. It actually sounded really scary and really terrifying to me. So I was like, I don't really want to go through that. So it kind of lines up well that there's someone else who can do that. And so it was always kind of assumed that Alicia would be pregnant. And then ideally, we wanted to have it a mix of both of us. So for me, like the ideal was as soon as I heard about the concept of reciprocal IVF, that's what I wanted to do because it was a piece of me and a piece of her. And that would be ideal. So that's my perspective.
Yeah, I just kind of laughed because I completely understand what you're saying, but I think that it just worked out. Both of our ideals,
worked out. I realized as I was asking the question that they probably are the ones that it worked out for.
Yep.
We're in the lucky 1%.
Okay, so we went through that path and it worked out, which is very exciting. And we're going to get into that. Y'all are really amazing. And you sent over a bullet list of all the things that that you want to talk about because you're good guests and you listen and you know the stuff and you know what's been brought up on the show and all the things. So you had written down moving abroad. What was the decision surrounding moving abroad and how did that work out with your relationship and the whole thing?
We moved abroad because of Emily's job. The company that she works for has a location here in Edinburgh. And so she is amazing at her job. And we got this incredible opportunity to move for
a
couple of years.
Opportunities.
I know, like she said. And so we jumped on it for sure.
They told us, do you want to move? And we said, yes, we're doing it. And I said, okay, a month from now, you need to be in Scotland. So there you go.
Crazy.
Whoa.
Yeah.
Whoa,
so it was nuts. Fast. It was nuts.
Quite a whirlwind moving over. So that was also 2019. And we were only here for like 6 months and then COVID hit.
Yeah.
Oh, geez.
For me, moving over was quite hard. I didn't think that it would. I thought, that's very naive of me, but I thought like I would just I'm able to work over here alongside Emily. And so I figured we'd come over, get settled, and then I'd just pick up a job. But whenever we came over, I got quite depressed and very anxious. And so there was a whole journey for that. I wasn't working, so I had all this time to just be in my thoughts, and I didn't really have much of a purpose. And it was a whole lot. And then COVID hit, and so then it just compounded anxiety.
And you're stuck inside, and you don't know anyone.
Yeah, stuck inside, like a world away from family. So
it was also quite different being in Scotland. They were very strict about the lockdown, and we were in lockdown for a lot longer than the U.S. was, and you're only supposed to go out once a day. And so we would go out for a long time. So we would go out for as long as possible. We'd be out, you know, for our daily walk. It would be like 5 hours of a daily walk because we just wanted to get outside.
Yeah.
But we were lucky. We had some friends here, also expats that came from Boise. And we became this little huddle, you know, when we were governmentally allowed. But we went hiking, and it's beautiful here in Scotland. And so we were lucky to have that community and lean on each other for that time.
Well, that's good, at least. And then is that what ended up helping you, Alicia, get kind of out of this depression that you found yourself in?
Yes, that and medication and therapy. So I've been in therapy on and off, you know, throughout my life, but I had never taken medication before. And I just got to this point where I wasn't able to function, like, just in my day to day. And so went and talked to a really wonderful psychiatrist who really listened. And, you know, he was like, I don't think that you'll need to be on medication for your whole life, but this is a good way to get you out of that fight or flight that you're kind of stuck in right now. And so I trusted him, and I did get on some medication, and it just made me so much stable again and clear headed. And I was able to, you know, see purpose and meaning and things again. And yeah, it was life-changing.
Wow. That's good to hear. And, you know, for anybody out there who's struggling, there is help. You just have to find it, right? Oof, that's heavy though. Whew, so many heavy things. Okay. And then where do we go from there?
Yeah. So then we started talking about having a baby, and Alicia would bring it up, you know, keep bringing it up, try to test me out. Like, is she ready to talk about it? That kind of thing. And it was kind of gradual, and Alicia found a clinic. Poor Alicia did so much work and research on her own because I wasn't ready. So she had the clinic. She had sperm donors picked out. She had, like, they had books of information. She was prepared. And I remember the night before our first
clinic appointment,
I remember being in bed and just telling her, I am terrified and I don't know if I'm ready to start this. And being, like, really scared, like, I'm tearing up thinking about it because I was so nervous to say it because I knew she wanted this so bad. And I just didn't know if I was quite ready yet. And it was really good that I said that. Mm-hmm. And I think it was a couple months later before we had another appointment. Mm-hmm. So it was good because we had the appointment when we did and we got more information. And then it was a couple months later. I don't know what it was. I think it was just time for me to process. And it was a combination of a lot of things. But then I felt much better about starting the process. And yeah.
It's very interesting because one of the just logistics, you know, of queer families is having to pay to give birth and or get pregnant and give birth and everything. Mm-hmm. And so when we moved over here, we didn't think that we were going to be staying long term. And so we said, hey, why don't we take advantage of the fact that it is way cheaper to get pregnant over here than in the States?
Yeah.
So we wanted to jump on the fact that we were here and get a move on starting our family.
Yeah, I get that. We'll be right back.
Queer Family Podcast, love is love.
Let's talk about sperm, baby. I had to. But we do. We have to talk about the sponsor of this here episode, California Cryobank. My favorite cryobank in all the land because they helped me make my two babies. I love them to death. They held my hand through it. They've been around for over 45 years. And they're there to answer any questions you might have regarding their huge, huge catalog of donors. I absolutely love them. And if you're like me and you get a little cuckoo-ca-choo when you're trying to choose your donor and you don't just look at the medical, they have all the info you could possibly need They have personal essays written by the donors. They have voice recordings. They have pictures of the donors. They have what you need to pick the right donor for you and your future bebes. So check them out. And I have a code for you. If you are interested in starting this search today, you're going to go to cryobank.com, use your promo code LOVEISLOVE. And with that, you're going to get a free level 2 subscription to their donor catalog. You can also apply that to a really nice discount on a level 3 subscription, which gives you even more information. All the information we can get on these donors is great. Am I right? Am I right? So go shopping today and let's make some babies and let's lift up this whole world with queer families because we're the best. We all know it's true. Let's show it. Let's show it to the world. California Cryobank. Love is love. Let's go. Let's go.
Love is love.
So you went to the clinic and what happened? How'd it go?
It was good. We basically just asked questions. They didn't have like a package for like same-sex or queer couples. So the package that we had to do was like, I think it was like a mix of different things because they didn't have like a reciprocal IVF package, which ironically now they do. So it's almost like we saw another gay couple there. So we were like, we feel like there's been enough that they actually made a package for it.
You paved a road.
Yeah. Exactly. I had to be an egg donor because it was my eggs and in her. So that was a little bit frustrating with like some of the documentation and stuff. It wasn't quite right. And like, it was like, I was giving up my eggs and it's not really right. So that didn't quite fit. So it's really positive that they now have different, like a different path, you know, for people like us.
So you don't have to say these, I'm donating my eggs to this person.
Right.
Yeah. Ridiculous. Right.
Exactly. Exactly. So yeah, we did egg donation. So I did the egg donation. I actually thought the process was not too bad. The hardest part was I had to travel. So I would travel like every other day by train, like 4 hours by train there and then 4 hours back. So it was like a full day excursion thing.
Far. Whoa.
I was working the entire time. So I would just work on the train there and then work on the train back. It was a pain in the ass.
Did you tell your work what it was for?
No. So all I did was say, all I did was say that I needed to travel for some personal things and they're really, really understanding and flexible. And so they were like, no problem. They didn't ask more questions, which was really helpful. And they were really flexible. So that was good. And then I think I took a day off for the egg collection and I didn't have to explain why or anything like that. Mm-hmm. And so the egg collection went well. I don't have a super high egg count. So even though I was 29, I'm 30 now, I think we got maybe 12 eggs. I've listened to some other people's stories and they're like 30 something. And I'm like, are you serious?
I know. It makes me mad every time.
So we started with 12 eggs. And then by the time we mixed with the sperm and went down, we only had 2 embryos.
It's tough. It sucks. Because you think, oh my God, you know, I actually got 17 eggs, which I was like, yeah, I'm a rock star, you know. And then it dwindles down, like you get the phone call. Yeah, so now you're down to 8. Oh yeah, now it's down to 5. And I remember finding out we were at like an amusement park for my older daughter. And they called me to tell me that there was only 1 viable one and 2 that looked crappy. I was like, great, thanks so much. Good to know. Right, so that does happen. And it is. It's like you put so much into this.
Yes, it's so much effort and time and the shots and just everything. Mm-hmm. Ugh, yeah,
it is.
So we made it out with 2 embryos. Mm-hmm. And then it was like grade A and grade B or something. So we went with the grade A one and we did implantation. I don't know if you want to talk about that.
Yeah, so then we did one, what was it? The transfer of the first one that they thought was good. And it didn't work and didn't take.
Well, it sort of did. So
yeah, so that was even harder.
She got pregnant. And
oh,
she,
nuts.
I know these stories. I've heard them all on your podcast. It's the people who test early. And it's really tough because.
Don't test early.
Alicia wanted to test early. I did not want to test early. It was really hard because we both were saying different things. And so Alicia just couldn't wait. And so she tested and she was pregnant. And that was like. I know. Early on, I can't remember how many days, but we got so excited. And then we tested like the next 2 days or something, and she wasn't pregnant anymore. And so we aren't really sure, like, false positive, did it take, or, did it, like, what happened?
Yeah, I think they say that if you test too soon, that the hormones that they've put into your body for the transfer could give you a false positive or something. I'm pulling this back from, like, 8 years ago, so I'm not sure I'm right there. But I feel like I remember hearing something like that. And then also, that being said, I definitely tested early for all 3 years of trying to get pregnant. So you're not alone. We all do it. It was the last one that I didn't test on where I was finally pregnant.
Yes.
But, you know, I'm not advocating either way because I get it. It's so hard. It's so hard.
I think the not knowing was too hard. So that when we did round two, with the second embryo, the grade B one, I talked to Alicia about it. And I remember being so nervous to talk to her about it because I really did not want to test. And I had talked to my friend and I had been like, this is really hard. This is going to be really hard for me if she wants to test early. I just can't do it. And so I talked to her about it. She was like, okay, that's fine. We can wait. Like, we'll wait the full whatever. So we waited the full time and then we were pregnant.
Yay.
And we have a perfect, perfect, beautiful baby girl.
She's amazing.
And grade B embryo. Congrats. She's amazing and wonderful and perfect. And so you never know like what that means when they tell you that, but she's absolutely perfect.
Yeah, I love that. And you never know. You never know that grade B. I love a grade B embryo. There was somebody else I had talked to who like chose to put the grade B embryo in for some reason that I don't remember and ended up, it worked out and there were twins.
Oh, wow.
But I don't remember. Well, I should know, remember the episode, but I don't. But I remember that part of the conversation. There's a lot of them, so. Yeah, that's true. All right. So that's exciting. Were you still taking medication for the depression?
That's a really good question. When we decided that we were going to go ahead and start to get pregnant, I worked with my psychiatrist for, I think, like 9 months to come off all of my medication. And it's not like I was on a lot of things. I was only on two different things, but he wanted to go really slowly so that it just came out of my system really gradually. And that was perfect. But I eventually got off and I was off my medication for, I believe, a year. And just because of like paperwork and Emily had to travel and certain things, it just took us that long to, you know, with the clinic to work it all out. But what happened was we did the first transfer and then it didn't take. And then like days, maybe a week later, Emily went on travel for work to Hong Kong for an entire month.
Yeah.
And that was bad. And it was really, really bad for my mental health. I was dealing with like the loss of the pregnancy or the embryo, and then also just dealing with my anxiety of being away from Emily and not having her support. And so when she returned, I talked to my psychiatrist again, and we all made the decision to put me back on medication. And we talked with him a lot and said he knew that we were trying to have a baby and that I would be carrying. And so it's just really important, I think, for listeners to know that ideally everybody wants to just not be on any medication because we just don't know about a lot of different things. But, you know, tons of people are on medication for their heart or, you know, different things about their body. And I don't think that there's anything different than being on medication for your mind and your mental health. And he said that it would ultimately be better for me to be less stressed for that affecting the baby than for the very, very minute side effects that could happen from the medication. And so, yes, I was on my medication all throughout pregnancy and still am on my medication. So I was on my medication through Nursing Sky and she had no side effects. Yes, they said, my psychiatrist said that there might be a little bit of something after she was born and that didn't even happen. So it's really important to take your mental health seriously, especially when you're going into pregnancy and then postpartum.
So true. Good points. And it is important to know that you can take medicine and have a family and that you can make it work, you know, and, you know, make sure you have people who are supporting you and helping you through it. That's good to hear. And I want to say, because something struck me when you were talking after you said, you know, you're dealing with the loss of the embryos and there's something to this queer family building that it feels, because I was thinking, like, what if it was like, this is where my head goes. What if it was like a hetero couple, a non-queer couple who had just started trying, it was their first try that they did it, you know, they baby danced the old fashioned way in the, in the bed or wherever it happened to be. And it didn't work the first time, right? As opposed to a queer couple who has gone through all the medication, all the things to get the eggs, to harvest the eggs, to do, when you have science involved. I feel like, and y'all can correct me if I'm wrong, I feel like the blow is a lot harder, even though this is your first try. And this is one of those differences when it comes to queer family building, because we don't get to have that, like, well, we tried naturally, you know, oh, that mm-hmm. was just our first try. Sometimes it takes people 6 months. We don't have right. that, right? And so every single failure, I should say, every single negative pregnancy test feels like a supreme, extreme failure that should have freaking worked, because science, people, right?
Absolutely.
That was just, I just had a little takeaway moment right there. And that's why it hurts so bad, mm-hmm. which
you put so
understandably,
much into it.
Yeah. And then Alicia, it's understanding that you went into back to a dark place. It's hard. Oh, God, queer family baby making is not for the faint of heart, huh?
It's no. not. It's true.
My other question was, what was the healthcare financial situation like for you? Like, was it covered or partially covered? How does it work over across the water, as they say?
So there's two different ways you can go. You can go public, which is the NHS, mm-hmm. and that's the national healthcare system. If you go the public way, it's you get on a waiting list, and it can be like years and years before.
Right, I've heard that.
Yeah. And yeah. there used to be a rule that you had to prove that you were trying for however much time, which is just ridiculous. It's gone now, so that's yeah. good.
That's the most biased rule in the whole
progress. But the second way you could go is private. So we went private, which we were fortunate enough. Honestly, we did a lot of saving during COVID. That kind of helped us. The price is just crazy different than in the US. I mean, it's like a third, maybe more, or maybe less, a fourth.
Yeah.
Maybe even less. I don't know. It's definitely much more reasonable.
Yeah, because in the US, you're looking anywhere from 10,000, and that's at the very low end, to 20,000 for basically what you did was an IVF cycle split between the two of you.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
I'm trying to convert pounds to dollars, but I think that maybe it was like $4,000.
Oh,
like
my God.
Altogether. Yeah.
Oh, my God.
It's more expensive now. Like the reciprocal IVF package they came up with is more expensive than what we paid. But
it's all inclusive. Yeah. And so that was a really big thing that I wanted.
It had meds and it had everything in it.
Yeah. So.
Oh my God.
Yeah, it's crazy.
I know.
We're really, really lucky. We're really, really lucky. So it was one of the reasons that we wanted to come here.
Exactly. Yeah.
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 So we did buy the sperm separately. Yeah.
That's awesome. And, you know, like, that's just an example of how it could be. It doesn't have, once again, here we are again. It's not that complicated, yet it is. But it doesn't have to be complicated here.
Yeah.
You know, we can figure this out, guys. Come on. Wow, that's amazing. I'm going to go to Scotland and have a baby. I can't even have babies anymore, but now I want to go check it out. I'm kidding.
Makes sense why people do that, though. Like, go temporarily. Right. I've listened to different episodes where people do that. I understand why people do it.
Yeah. People travel really far to make these because it's so expensive. It's not fair. And it's not accessible to all.
Yeah.
It's just not. So you have your beautiful little girl. And the birth was... How'd the birth go? Was it a good birth? Was it a... We're laughing.
Yeah. Skylar's birth was quite traumatic.
Oh.
It ended up being fine and totally great. So when I was 33 and a half weeks pregnant, we were on our way to a rugby match and my water started breaking. Yeah, my water started breaking on the bus. Mm-mm. And so we took a different bus, to the hospital. And we got admitted because they did a test and discovered that it was amniotic fluid, but I was not dilated. I should not have been giving birth at that point. So they admitted me overnight. And during the night, I started bleeding.
Oh, no.
And the bleeding continued until the morning and it wasn't stopping. And so we had wonderful midwives and nursing staff, and the doctors came in and talked to us, and they said, we just think it's wise to go ahead and do an emergency C-section because Skylar seems fine. They were monitoring her and she seemed totally fine, but they didn't know where the bleeding was coming from.
Mm-hmm.
So rushed me in and 15 minutes later, Sky was out and they, you know, she was 7 weeks preemie and yeah. They expected she would need all this help, at least oxygen. She didn't need anything. Mm-hmm. She wasn't jaundiced.
Good, yeah. Skylar.
Yeah.
She was only in the NICU for like 4 days. And we actually were in the hospital for 2 weeks total, but that was only because she didn't know how to nurse yet. So she didn't know how to feed on her own. So she was being fed through a nasal tube. And once she could figure out how to nurse, then we were out.
Okay. Whew. So there was a good outcome to a very stressful situation. How many pounds was she?
She was 4 pounds, 12 ounces.
12 ounces, yeah.
That's almost as big as my son was.
Yeah. Really?
And okay. He was full term.
Alicia did a great job. You can't tell, but she's really small. And so.
Oh, see.
I hope I hope it's okay I'm saying this, but like, she'd be like, people would say, you barely look pregnant. And like, you know, thinking that that's a good thing. And Alicia would get up so upset. She'd be like,
I want to look pregnant.
So it didn't really look like Skye was big, but then she popped out and almost 5 pounds.
Wow. Imagine how big she would have been if she stayed in there and cooked longer.
Imagine. That's 10-pound baby.
It's so funny. My wife and I use the same donor. And my wife gave birth to our daughter. And that child came out almost 9 pounds. Huge baby. Wow. Huge. And then I gave birth with the same donor. And that little guy was like barely 5 pounds.
Wow.
So interesting. Interesting. Yeah. Well, that's good. So Skylar's good. Y'all are thriving. Life is good. You got the dog. You got the baby. You're living the ultimate life in Scotland.
Another testament to the healthcare system. We were in the hospital for 2 weeks and we didn't get a single bill.
Stop. Stop it right now. Stop it.
We pay into the national healthcare system every month. So there's a percentage that's taken out of my paycheck. So we do pay for it. But to not get hit with like a $10,000, $20,000 bill at the end of that was just major. So, I mean, the NHS, it's complicated, but it was really beneficial for us. And we got really amazing care, which was wonderful.
Wow. See, what the heck, US? And are you citizens there?
No.
See, you're not even like, what the hell?
Yeah. I know. It's crazy.
What? Why can't we figure this out? Ay. Oh, God, that is infuriating, but also I'm really happy for you.
Thank you.
That's so cool. So are we going to do baby number two? What's the plan?
Yes.
Because you know me, I make the babies.
Yes.
Oh, yeah?
Yes, we are. We're definitely planning on baby number two. Mm-hmm. So like I said earlier, I never thought about being pregnant, but there's a moment when we were at the getting the sonogram of Skye. Was the moment before we found out she was a girl. And not that that matters at all, but just looking at her on the sonogram, I had this moment where I was like, oh my gosh, I could do that. Like I could have a baby grow inside of me. And I was like, I want to feel that. And so I've just been like battling with it, like going back and forth, like in a good way, just trying to decide, do I want to do this? Do I not? Like I'm a pretty particular person. I like to work out. I like to feel good. I like, I just, my mental health is important. I like to take care of myself. And so I'm like, do I want to go through this? Do I want to be pregnant and potentially be sick? And do I want to gain weight and then have to work it off? Like it's stuff it's just normal to think about. Then I'm also like, because I want this little baby. I've gone back and forth a lot and I've gotten a lot of advice from friends and family. And so I'm going to do it. So as long as everything works. We started the process and hit a block, which maybe you want to talk about.
Yeah. So we were like really gung-ho to start like right after Skye was born.
Yeah. We're like ready for baby number two. We got a little baby. We can do it.
That's what the pregnancy hormones do. That's what happens.
So maybe like 3 months after she was born, we were like, okay, let's call it the clinic. Let's get this rolling again. But we knew that we wanted to do it this way, even though Emily was still kind of on the fence. We were pretty sure that we were going to do reciprocal IVF, just the reverse this time.
I just want to stop you for a second, because this is like, you're getting to do what you ideally would love to do and not having to say, oh, well, it's expensive. So maybe this time we just, you know, that's the difference. You get to do exactly what you want to do. Well, I don't know if you do, because I don't know the rest of the story. However, it's plausible.
Yes.
Which is financially plausible, which is huge.
It is. Yeah. It really is.
Yeah. Well, we should be able to do that. But when we called up the clinic at that point, they told us that since I had just given birth, I would have to wait a whole year before doing an egg collection or carrying again. Yeah, because they don't want to go in there and stimulate anything that might still be recovering. It was a huge blow, because I was like gearing up for it, you know, but I, you know, have been totally fine, you know.
Well, we hit that block and that was okay, because really, like, we probably should have waited a little bit longer anyway, because we had like a 3 month old. But then we go back again and we say, okay, now we're ready. It's because the year is coming up, because Sky is just over a year now. So like we were in the clear from that perspective. And they're like, oh, wait, but you're still breastfeeding. So you need to stop breastfeeding, because your period needs to come back.
Yeah, which it makes sense logically, but like I wasn't thinking about that. Yeah. So in
your
order for...
Your period doesn't come when you're breastfeeding? Wait, what?
Maybe it's for some people. It does for some people, for Alicia.
But it hadn't for me. It's like it can come back early, but it's prolonged to not come back if you are breastfeeding. Because there's what's called prolactin is in your body when you're nursing. And so it's really high when you're nursing, and they need to go down so that your body kicks off hormonally. Yeah. And so I just hadn't thought about that. And they didn't tell me.
But, you know, there's a lot of non-queers who are breastfeeding and they get pregnant.
And they're popping out babies.
Later, I know. Exactly.
And they breastfeed for like 5 years and nobody says anything about that. You know, I understand, though, they do have to be cautious.
Yeah. Exactly. And they also want the best outcome.
Yeah.
They want you to be like in your pristine, like,
shape
and the best chance, which is good, because you don't want to spend all the money, you know, and
time.
Yeah. So we're almost there, though, to the next phase. So Alicia has stopped breastfeeding, and we're going to have a follow-up appointment to get her prolactin checked and everything. So we're still a go, and we're just working through all the
steps,
yeah.
Oh, my God, that's so exciting. And you still have 2 vials of sperm.
One. So we bought 2 initially, and so we have 1.
Oh, you got 2.
Yeah.
Okay, you got 1 vial. It's gonna happen. It's going to work.
Yeah.
Yeah, manifest that.
Oh, you're going to get 40 eggs. That's my plan.
She has a lot better of a situation than I do. I said I had a lower egg. She does not. She has a lot. So I wouldn't be surprised.
Big bucks, no whammies. Here we go. We're going to get a lot of eggs. We're going to have a huge cache of eggs.
Yes.
Okay, that's the plan. That's exciting. And, you know, like they say, you're even more fertile after you've already given birth. I don't know. That's probably just a wives' tale, but.
It's exciting.
I don't know. Once your body does it once, it's like, I can do this.
Yeah. Yeah.
So let's make those babies.
Yes.
Oh, it's so exciting, though. This is wonderful. And it's really pretty freaking awesome to hear a story where you kind of got to do it the way you wanted to do it.
Yeah.
And it's funny that I asked that random question in the beginning, not realizing that this was going to be something that kind of highlights the differences and how much easier it really could be if the financial access was there.
Yes.
Yeah. Right? But it's really awesome to hear a story that is working out and you're getting to do it the way you want to. And I can't wait to hear about baby number 2, because I'm invested now.
Yeah. Should be exciting.
Is there anything else y'all wanted to talk about? Did we cover all the bases?
There's one thing I want to say. When I first started listening to the podcast, it was when you had the assistant, you had Helen.
Oh, yeah.
I still have Helen. She's over there.
I know. Yeah.
She's smoking in my living room, even though I tell her no smoking.
I remember saying something to Alicia about Helen, and Alicia's like, Helen's not real, Emily. Oh, and I was like, what are you talking about? I thought Helen was real. I totally thought she was real. And I thought you guys were just really mean to her.
Oh my God. You thought we were being mean to some old woman. Yeah. Oh my God. Who had no hair. We made all kinds of stories up about Helen is a crazy mofo. I'll tell you that. That's hilarious though. Because my mother told me, you need to stop talking so mean to Helen. People are going to think. I was like, Mom, everybody knows she's fake.
Yeah,
Emily. Oh, wow. That's funny.
It was really early. I'd only listened to a couple episodes. So I didn't get the context. I didn't know.
That's amazing. And then we got Beulah now too. I got a whole team that is non-existent. Yeah, I still have to rely on Helen. And she's a mess, I'll tell you that. She never does anything. Anytime somebody's like, hi, I emailed you like 6 months ago, I never heard a response, I blame it on Helen.
Yeah.
Perfect.
Oh, that I'm makes so sense. Sorry, Helen lost it in the inbox. Yeah. It's nice to have a fake assistant that you can blame everything on. Oh my God, that's amazing. And this has been awesome. And now you have to keep me posted because obviously I'm invested. I want to know how it all shakes down, as they say. It's exciting stuff.
Yeah, sounds good. Maybe in a couple of years, we'll tell you about the baby number two we had and new story. Hopefully less traumatic.
Even if it's less traumatic, you know, the thing that we always know with queer family building is there's going to be a story.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Right?
It's very true.
There will be a story because it's a journey. It's every baby's a journey, a big journey. So, well, I can't wait to hear. And I appreciate y'all writing in and coming on and telling this story because it's a good one.
Yes.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you so much for having us.
Queer Family Podcast.
A huge thank you once again to my sponsor for this episode, California Cryo Bank. Use code LOVEISLOVE for a free level 2 subscription to their donor catalog. And then come tell me about it.
Love is love.
Whew. Well, folks, I hope you enjoyed that episode as much as I enjoyed it. And if you did enjoy it, feel free to listen to another or watch another. I have so many episodes for your listening or viewing pleasure. Just go pick one and enjoy. There's a lot. There really is. And also, if you really do like this show, please, I know I say it all the time, but please do consider supporting the show on Patreon. You're just going to go to patreon.com/thequeerfamilypodcast. You're going to pick a tier, you're going to join, and you're going to get that bonus content. And you're also going to get my love and adoration for the rest of my life. I love you all. Thanks for tuning in. Keep on tuning in, and I'll see you next time. Mwah.
Early holiday savings have arrived at Tanger Outlets. Discover the best gifts from your favorite brands, perfect for everyone on your list. And stack your savings with up to 70% off, plus an extra 15 to 25% off only during Tanger Style. Save at Polo Ralph Lauren, Old Navy Outlet, Under Armour, Skechers, J.Crew Factory, and more. Hurry in. These early holiday deals last through November 24th. Tanger Outlets. More savings, more cheer.
You've got questions? O'Reilly Auto Parts has answers. Need a pro you can trust? We've got that too. No matter what you need, our professional parts people have the training and expertise to help you do things right. Deep automotive knowledge. Just one part that makes O'Reilly stand apart. The professional parts people.
O'Reilly.